Welcome to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast.
May 31st, 2026, episode 299, Observations. You have to be the luckiest groundhog in the world. Hello, everyone. Welcome into the corner, the Beekeeper's Corner. I'm Kevin England. Yeah, I'm on my way to America's Grower Row, Valley Crest, driving down Route 604 in Hunterdon County, and I just rode over a groundhog. It was running across the road. I applied the brakes, timed it properly, and it went between the front wheels and rear wheels, and I didn't run it over. I try to do my best to preserve wildlife. Otherwise, the outcome would not be good. Hey, I don't have a plan today. You could tell by that opening that I'm just going to record a podcast to talk about observations and what my thoughts are for the second half of the season tomorrow, June 1st. Yeah. I have a bunch of ideas rolling around in my head about what I want to do. And this trip is part of the first salvo of the plan. As I think through June on the bigger activities, I want to treat my bees. I want to do some queen rearing. I want to rebuild the nucleus apiary. And I'd like to mark my queens. I know that there's other activities around the house coming, but I need to sort out all my beekeeping equipment in the garage. And yeah, it's just one of those times where you stop, look from the airplane view of the entire operation and go, okay, I've gotten this far of the season. Now I need to take pause and say, what's next? What do I need to do? And how do I plan for that? So let's go with the adventure I'm on this morning, which is to bring the cell starter from the queen rearing course back. It still has the grafts in it. We grafted a week or so ago from that course, and all of the queens should be emerged. I have this device that is a frame, and in the frame it has a long box-like structure with a bunch of cavities built into the box structure that are screened off on both sides. It's like one contiguous row of cells for queens to be in. It has a hole in the top, and you take the graft capped queen cell and you stick it down through the hole, and then you tape it off so they don't push themselves out, and you let the queens emerge. And they each come out in their own little queen cage, so to speak, and then the bees will feed them through the screens. And when you're ready, you pull each individual cell cap off and let the queen out and put her into its destination colony. That's what's inside this. Now, when I went there this past week, I pulled all the capped queen cells and put them in. One of the queens popped out. So there is a live virgin queen running around in there. She needs to get in a hive quickly. And hopefully the rest of them all popped out. And there's about 10 virgin queens running around inside this contraption. My plan today is just to pick the colony up and bring it back home. And then go in and see what happened. I don't want to open it here because I don't want to let bees out. Now the interesting thing is, it was 44 degrees this morning. It was really cold. And I want to get to this colony this morning before it gets too warm and starts to have bees flying. I think there's going to be some bees flying there, but I can't avoid that by the time I get there. So, part one is to bring this colony home. Now, this was built 2 weeks ago. It needs to be refreshed as a cell starter. That brings me to plan two, which is to go through my current colonies and find resources to put inside this colony for capped brood. And for that to work, what I plan on doing is going through and looking for kept brood to put in there. And then I have to let the brood in those frames run its course so they don't build any queen cells, because the self-starter is not populated with a queen, so they're going to want to build. But basically refresh it, and then I can do my grafting maybe later this week or early next week. It's a succession of events, which is the typical thing that happens for queen rearing. That dovetails into plan number two for the apiary. Have all new queens this season. I have a couple leftovers from last year, but a lot of my stuff was split and it swarmed and it made new queens and so on. From that perspective, I'd like to go through every colony and give the girls a paint job. If the queen is marked, good. Then I will make a note to replace her with a new queen, if that's her destiny. And if the queen is not marked, then I will give her a paint job. I guess the question lies with, all of the queens that I have this year were likely provided by swarm cells during the natural course of it. And there's no reason to believe that these are not good queens. They were raised by nature. But I'll look at the patterns and see how they're performing. And if anybody's a little bit questionable, I'll make remarks for that, so that when I rear queens and get them going, I will set those questionable ones up for replacement. My goal is every queen in every box, if possible, and I'm not perfect on this, as a young new queen. It's a good way to go into winter. It helps with winter survivability. So additionally, I think it's the time where I want to go pull all of the capped brood out and isolate it. Stand number 7 in my apiary is empty. And I'm going to take all the capped brood, like I did last year, out of all the colonies and place it in a single box, let it come out, and then treat it. That takes the mite burden under the cappings from all of my colonies and concentrates it in one place. But it also makes every one of my colonies with the state that there are no mites under the cappings. When I get to that point, I wish to put a Formic Pro on. I'm going to kill all the mites riding around in those colonies. I have a personal belief that I think Formic Pro is a great product, and they say it goes in under the cappings. But when the colonies are absolutely huge, tons and tons and tons of bees, I don't know how well it can penetrate the capping when it's covered by bees in moss. So this resolves that situation. There might be a little capping left. I won't take all of it. I might leave some of it. But for the most part, all of the varroa mites that are in drone brood have run their course. They're now out on the workers, or they're under the cappings for the workers. And in that perspective, when I pull all the cappings out, there should be a minor amount. I think I'm going to do a really good job cleaning up the varroa mites. Now, when I did this last year, some people asked me, what do you think about pulling all that population out of your colony? I think last year was a little bit later, and I don't know that this caused any issues, but my sense is they can afford it. They can afford one generation of bees coming out of the mix. They don't get that big. And the colony responds. My analog to this is, if a colony swarms and all the bees leave, a colony does perfectly fine to recover. In fact, it's often beneficial for the entire operation to have a bunch of bees leave and reset. Now, this colony swarmed previously, and they lost a generation of bees, and now I'm doing this to them, and they're losing a generation of bees. Well, I don't know. I am messing with the dynamics of colony patterns and so on. But again, I think bees in a colony are quite malleable, meaning flexible. And in that context, I think they'll be fine. They were fine last year. And as I do this over a couple years and learn, I will see if there's any downside to it. I think last year the colonies looked really healthy. So my plan is Formic Pro on the colonies where I pull the brood out, except for one. I have Noroa, and I might treat to knock all the mites down, and in one of my colonies, I'm going to put Noroa and see if I can thwart the ramp up for the rest of the year and stop the varroa mites from populating. I think this would be an interesting piece. Now, one of the things about doing this so early in June, and likely this will all play out by mid-June, is that they have the rest of the year for varroa mites to continue to build a population. And my expectation is that I will use oxalic acid vaporization. I have a vaporizer. Later this year, later in the fall, when the brood starts to taper down for winter and all the varroa mites are out on the bees, I will clean them up before they go into winter so they're healthy. And obviously, I'll watch what goes on inside the colony. As to what's going on, there's a couple of swarms that I put in the apiary, and I'm turning to a different topic. I haven't looked at how well they're progressing. I've just been too busy to look at it. Pad number one, pad number four, pad number nine. These are all single deep colonies that are growing themselves with no help or issue from me to double deeps. It's the policeman. He's sitting in a sneaky spot, isn't he, here on Route 31 North at Clinton. Good thing I am not hammered down. As I peek in the rear view mirror to see if he pulled out. He did not. He stayed resident. I was not interesting to him. I'm the first car in a long line, of course. And certainly he knows how fast I'm going. I'm doing 58 in a 55. Well, chatting with you, so all's good. Moving on. I want to see how these colonies are progressing. I haven't fed anything this spring. And I love to say I want to put bees into winter fat and happy. And how to do that is to feed them through summer, when we have the dearth. There's still a nectar flow here. In fact, the clover is just gone berserk in all the yards as I look around. So I think as the clover goes, it'll sustain the nectar flow for our region for some time. But in that context, it's going to come to an end sometime in mid-July. And that means trips to Costco to buy some sugar. And I prophylactically feed during August and September, because you can never tell in our zone where we are, south of Interstate 78, New Jersey, that seems to be the demarc point, whether or not the asters and goldenrods for the fall time frame are going to be sufficient to load on food for winter. Some years it works really well for us, and other years it doesn't. And for what it's worth, during the lanternfly years, it was easier because they did a great job at it. Now, one thing I've seen this year is autumn olive is just berserk in this region. And I don't know how long autumn olive persists. Is it something that's going to continue to be there into summer? And how much access do our bees have in our apiary to it? I'm not quite positive. I'm planning on feeding. I'm pretty sure that is a given for us. So usually July, August timeframe, I take the feeders out and load them on top. I like to use top feeders when it's hot enough to do so. I will pull the honey supers off and harvest all the honey off the colonies. And then as I pull them off, I will feed. Now, one of the things that I have to think about when I do that is sometimes when I pull the honey supers off, there's so many bees in the box, there's not enough room for them. And I like to occasionally put a honey super box empty on top. I don't think they're going to build foundation at that point. That's about the time frame that they stop doing that. And so it just gives them a little space. And when I feed them, if they're really overzealous, they may take that and put it in the honey supers, which I don't want. So that's always a kind of like, should I or shouldn't I give them the room they need because I took two boxes away off the top, which had tons of bees in them? I always question the best way to get around that. You could take the two honey supers off of a 10 frame over 10 frame and force the bees to just deal with it down below. But given July, August, there's still the opportunity for congestion and swarm behavior. You never know how that works. I guess I'll cross that bridge when I get to it. So we'll call this part one of this episode because I'm at the driveway of Valley Crest. And I'm going to go load this colony up. And then I'll come back and talk about the rest of it for the ride home. On the road again. I'm back. I am driving home now. I have a colony in the bonnet, in the boot, in the back of the car. I drive a Honda CR-V. It's an everyday, regular, basic vehicle. As my daily driver, and it always seems odd to put honeybees in the back of the vehicle with you. I guess that's normal, right? Because most people drive SUVs. What I notice, and this is always the mystery of the universe, is I carry this box fully sealed, taped up, no bees, nothing around, and I put it inside the back of the car, and even now when I look, there's two honeybees on the back window. How? Where do they come from? I look, you know, occasionally what I think happens is they sneak underneath the bottom board or they're under some sort of crevice. There have been times, I must share, when I transport that I forget to tape up a hole, maybe the inner cover notch or things like that. I didn't miss them this time. And I actually brought this colony out, set it in the middle of the field for a minute, flicked off any errant bees, and tried to make sure, visually, underneath, around, back, on top, that there were no errant bees. And yeah, there's a couple of errant bees flying around. If you ever find yourself in that situation, it's no big deal. They usually fly at the windows. And if they get even more zealous, they'll fly up and come up to the side windows. And occasionally, and I've been known to see this, they come up and get to the front window, the windshield, or the windshield, or the window next to you. If you're really freaked out about that, like, just pull over and open the windows, and they'll all fly out. And if there is a bigger problem than that, like mass exodus somewhere because they've got a way to get out and they're pouring out during the transport, pull over, open the boot, and get out that ever
trusty roll of blue tape. You have one of those, right? In the back of your car for your beekeeper, you'll always have it in there somewhere, especially if you transport bees. Blue tape is your friend, and you go in and you figure out what's what. I always leave a bee suit, blue tape, and an extra hive tool in the back of the car, always, at all times, for these particular occasions. So there's a colony in the back, and there's a couple bees on the windshield, or on the back window, I should say, and I'm not going to fuss over that. I didn't get there in time. Dang it. I was really mad at myself. I went down, drank my coffee, did whatever, said it's 44 degrees, bees aren't going to be flying at that temperature. And I answered an email from California about doing a presentation this Thursday for them on Zoom. And probably that little bit of extra time that I took to do some correspondence took away that window of non-flying. By the time I got there, there were foragers flying. When I closed it off with a entrance reducer facing the way that no bees can come or go, I noticed immediately bees coming back at the entrance of the colony. It kills me to pull that colony off that stand, knowing there's no other beehives right there for the bees that I left behind. Now, there is a full setup right next to it. I think there's two deeps, two mediums, with all kinds of frames, but there's no bees in it.
Buddy, you got 2 hours.
They're having Kirk Day today on the Kraken Channel. That's my brother-in-law talking about. It'll take 2 more weeks, Captain. You've got 2 hours, Scotty. They're having a little fun, chitter-chatter, Bo. So if you hear that, just ignore it. They'll go in that other box and they'll be orphans. Now, my plan is to transfer the contents of this box back out of here and bring this box, which belongs to Bob Claus, back to that apiary, put it on the stand in a couple days. But unfortunately, for the 30, 40 bees that I saw on the entrance that I left behind, they're going to be orphans. There's not much I could do about it. Do a better job, Kevin, next time. Get there on time. When it's cold and everybody's still inside and you don't leave those foragers behind. Next chapter of the summer is managementoring. So far, the attendance of the managementoring, the sessions have been pretty good. I'm pleased with the conversation we're having with these beekeepers, getting past any of their challenges, teaching things based on their observations where they have questions. And the thing that pleases me about once a call when I get to do a roundtable and say, you know, XYZ, it's your turn. Do you have any questions? Say, well, I had questions, but they were answered by the other person earlier, the questions they had. Now, good. It's always interesting how people always through the season have very similar questions because of their experiences and what goes on at that time of year in a beehive colony. And it meanders through the season, as I know from doing this for 5, 6, 10 years, whatever it is that starts out with swarmy stuff, starts out with queen problem stuff. It goes to treeping stuff in the summer. And it's great to watch the beekeepers evolve in the program. And also to know that they're pretty successful. I say that with all humility. The contrast of what I hear the experience of the beekeepers in our program to beekeepers on Facebook or when I go to a beekeeping meeting for different clubs that I attend.
I'm giving her all she's getting, Captain.
It's one of those things where I'm happy that the program is doing the fundamental underpinning of what it was created for, which is don't struggle. come in, ask your questions, get your information, and we will
engage.
We will have to turn that off. We will do our best to make sure that you can get through the season without a lot of stress and strife. And I only turned to a Kevin moment. Yesterday, I helped my twin and his wife with some bees. And even though they've been doing it 5 years, even at 5, 6 years as a beekeeper, you run into times where you're doing things and you've never encountered that yet. You just haven't. When your colony, for example, swarms and it has to requeen itself, one of the most common laments that we tell beekeepers is to be patient. Yeah, turn this down. Hold on.
Aye, aye, Kevin.
Be patient. Be patient. Wait. Queen will come. Queen doesn't manifest itself after a colony swarms in a week or 2 weeks. Or even 3 weeks. It takes longer for that whole process to run the course and for you to see fruit. And this is the time of year, speaking of the managed mentoring questions, where people are like, should I wait? Should I go buy a queen? The answer is wait. So if you're in that position, this is the prototypical time of year where beekeepers have experienced a swarm sometime in the good, bountiful May timeframe. And at the end of May, early June, they're wondering if their colony is going to come back, if they're queenless, what's going on. One of the things that we saw in spades is the colony is calm. A colony that's waiting for a queen to come back is calm. Everything's in order. Bees are just doing their thing. They might have collected quite a bit of honey in that time. There's a lot of honey storage in the brood nest. You'll see that because unemployed bees that don't have to take care of nurse duties make a lot of honey. As the nurse bees age out, they tend to turn to foraging. One of the questions or challenges you might see is the fact that they fill the entire brood nest with honey. And it actually works to your advantage in that respect, because when they're filling it all up, you don't know if you have a queen. But we're on the cusp of having a queen, meaning the queen is coming back into service after a swarm. They leave a spot open. So doing inspections of their colonies yesterday as I was pulling frames, I kept saying, look at this spot. Do you see it? Do you see? Look at the way that the frame is laid out by the bees. It's in the middle of the brood nest. There's a big open hole about the size of a large grapefruit. And around it, there's pollen and nectar stored. And there's nothing going on in that hole. But if you look, the cells are beautiful. They're pristine. They're polished. They look spectacular. They look good. And you say, okay, they've set the table for the queen, and they're just waiting for her. So in the days to come, when you want to tell whether you have a queen or not, if you make a mental note, that frame, number 4, for example, in the top box or bottom box, is the one that had the grapefruit-sized patch. You go back and look in that, and next thing you know, boom, it's filled with all kinds of brood. Whenever you find that big open space in the middle of a colony that seems to be queenless, that's what they're doing. They set the table for the queen, and they're trying to get the queen sorted out. So that, to me, coupled with the fact that the bees were extremely calm, they weren't running on the comb. When you open the beehive colony, they're not zooming all over the place and making a lot of noise. A colony that is missing a queen and doesn't have aspects of a queen, meaning they don't smell any queen pheromone of somebody wandering around in there, getting their act together, they tend to fan. And when you open it, you hear, sounds like a little fan blowing. And they're nervous. And they come up off the comb. And they get a little pissy and they're stingy.
That's a colony that has no future queen coming, and you need to intervene. When do you experience these things? Right now. Middle to the end of May, and sometimes through the beginning, especially when the bounty of April and May caused them to swarm. This is the time frame when, if they're going to be queenless, they start to get a little fussy. So when you're doing your next inspection, if you have a colony that swarmed and you're waiting for it to get its mojo on, look for the hole. Look for the clean capped or clean set to stage area in your brood nest, or listen for the sound. Now, one thing, if you go in and you smoke the colony, and you really smoke them down through, they'll make that sound. Why? Because they're clearing all the smoke you put down in there. When you smoke the frames after taking the roof off and taking the inner cover off, smoke across the top of the frames. Don't point the smoker down and smoke down in. One, if you're looking for a queen, you're chasing her away. She's going to run down below or down off onto the woodenware. And two, you're going to put so much smoke in there that they're going to have to activate their wings in order to clear it all out, because you just gassed them. I see beekeepers take their smoker and they turn it and just blow and blow and blow and blow. That aggravates the bees too. Some of them jump off and get a little pissy and defensive about that. You want to turn your smoker so that when you blow smoke, you're blowing it across the top of the frames, not down through the seams. But if you blow it down in and you hear this loud, that's not the queen's roar. That's not, hey, I don't have a queen. So why do the bees make all that noise?
What exactly is a queen's roar?
They make that noise because they have the Nazanov gland, which is at the tip of their abdomen. And they turn that gland up and they fan to get the cum hair scent. The typical behavior for this is, maybe they had a virgin queen, the queen went out to get mated, and they give off the colony scent for their colony to lure that queen to come back in. That's what that's about. Please, queen, come back. We miss you. The good news is for my brother's apiary and talking with Karina, there's one colony that we couldn't find the queen. There were two deep boxes, 20 frames, and it was absolutely piled high with bees. So the fact that we didn't find her is not a surprise. And if you've ever looking for a virgin queen, that's even harder because she's not much bigger than a worker, quite honestly. Not much bigger than a worker. Oh, this should be interesting. We'll see how this goes. I'm at Costco getting gasoline, and I just opened the window, and there's a couple bees right here. I don't think they'll fly out. We'll keep this on the down low. They won't know there's bees in the box. I'm going to pause here for a second while I tell the guy to fill me up. Give me a sec. $4.13 a gallon. That sure beats the $4.50-something it was last week, or the week before when I stopped in here. Gas prices are crazy. And that means that fuel prices for flights anywhere you go this year are going to be really high. Vacations are going to be expensive, but I digress. Costco, check. Hey, there's the root beer Toyota. One of the Costco workers here has a brown root beer colored truck that he parks, and the thing is always immaculate. It's crystal clean, and it looks spectacular. So it's a really cool looking color for a pickup truck. I don't know if I'd buy one, but every time I see it, I'm like, yeah, damn, that's cool. That root beer colored truck. It would be a cool color for a hot rod. I'm all over the place. That's what happens when it's a freeform show. Okay, I was talking about swarms and managementoring. Managementoring, coming back to that, moving past that open space thingy-bob. I've been coaching our folks to get ready for treatments. It's probably a little early on most people's radars, but I want to get them conditioned to not waiting till critical mass of Varroa mites is overwhelming their colonies. What we teach them is June, July is the time to treat, to monitor and check and make sure that Varroa mites don't enter critical mass to the point where they're doing irreparable harm to the colony. A lot of beekeepers wait till August and maybe even September. By that time, it's already happened. If you think about all season long, for every bee that emerges, how many Varroa mites could have been conditioned in that cell? Let's just, for hypothetical, say 2 Varroa mites, which is highly plausible, come out for every bee that emerges where there was a Varroa mite in the cell. If you think about the number of bees you have in your colony, and that 2 Varroa mites could have come out for every one where there was a Varroa mite cell, think about how many Varroa mites you've groomed. There could be as many Varroa mites in the colony, and I don't think this is overstating anything, as bees at some point in high infestations, depending on how well your colony's been doing that, whether it's had a brood break from a swarm, or any of that stuff. And so from that perspective, June is the time frame when you'll typically see enough critical mass that your thresholds will be high enough to warrant a treatment. And so the common question I get is, what treatment do you like to use in the summertime? Well, if I'm telling you as guidance to treat in June or July, you may still have honey supers on. And if you do, then you have to pick a product that works with honey, because you don't want to taint the honey product. So you can't reach for Apicard, for example, or something like that. In addition to that, this is the part of the season where you have a lot of capped brood. We just talked about Formic Pro goes under the cappings. Some beekeepers are running oxalic acid vaporizations in succession, multiple treatments. You can do that with honey on board. It's not typically a go-to procedure, but there's enough beekeepers these days doing that. They'll oxalic acid their colony vaporization and then wait X number of days, maybe it's 5, maybe it's 7, maybe it's 10, and do it again. And what they're doing is getting the subsequent Varroa mites coming out. I'm a little skipped because I'm sitting here in the Flemington Circle, which is notorious for crashing a lot of cars. Make sure I get through Clayley, if not, get hammered by somebody from Pennsylvania who doesn't know how to drive the Circle. I grew up here in Flemington, and Flemington is called Circle City sometimes by some of the natives like me, because we have 3 circles, the Route 202 circle, the Route 12 circle, and the Main Street circle. They're all less than a mile apart. So if you want to learn how to drive a circle, grow up in a town that has 3 of them. They've changed the pattern of these circles recently. Where you used to have the right-of-way, you now don't, and they re-engineered them. And that makes it even worse, because even the locals are confused sometimes about which way they should go. But that being said, there's a honeybee next to the bee on the window. This is what happens when I don't go from a script. I'm all over the place. Okay. I'm back to treatments. Formic is the right answer. Oxalic acid is a decent answer. Just pick something where you can have honey supers on. Or you could wait, take your honey supers off, and then get your mojo on with whatever product you want. I got asked recently about Feroxan. Feroxan is not a product that you use for a major knockdown. And if you do have a large infestation, it's a product you could use, but it may not be as effective as you think it is going to be.
And whatever the case, the textbook version is, you put your treatment in, and after it's done, you test to see whether it actually did what you needed it to do, which is eradicate varroa mites to a level that's safe for the colony to proceed. Treatments, that's the next run. And I already said what I was planning on doing this year, come the June-July time frame. Honey harvesting is coming up, and I think it's time for us to just do that first blush look of what we need to do to harvest. Do we need jars? I think we have plenty in stock. I'll leave that to Sharon. Extractor's in good order, don't need any parts for it. If you borrow an extractor, then maybe you want to get yourself on your list. Yeah, just thinking through all that, like how are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? What space are you going to do it? Is there anything you're going to change? Would you like to buy an uncapping tank, a different one? Whatever the case may be, that was the other conversation I had with people who actually have beehives and are in the MedSearch program. Now's a good time to start thinking, at least, how do you plan to execute your honey harvest? Typical summer activities. One thing I wanted to say about this time of year that often goes undone, and it struck me, I reared a bunch of nukes, and the nukes were building white wax all over the place. They want to build wax. If you want to build wax for any reason, get some foundation drawn out. Now is your last chance. Theoretically, the best time to get wax built is when there's a nectar flow. With the flow of clover on, you have a shot until, at least in the mid-Atlantic and the northeast region, probably mid-July to get that accomplished. If you're a new beekeeper and you put in a package or you put in a nucleus this year, you should be feeding that all the way through, till it's full grown and all of the food is there. Big population, lots of nectar coming in and or sugar solution is the key to building wax. They need the population to have all the right bees of the right age with their wax glands activated. They need a lot of bees in order to create the heat zone required to make the honey, sorry, the wax malleable. And they need large workforces so that they build the comb contiguously and don't build a wonky little spurt here and a wonky little vertical spurt there and so on. At EAS this year, we have a speaker coming in who wrote some articles about getting bees to build all year long. And his trick is to take foundation, wax foundation, roll it up, and push it into the margins along the top bar, side bar, bottom bars, and bees will literally chew up all that wax and redeposit it onto the frames at a time when they're not traditionally making a lot of wax with wax gland activations. He showed me a photo in advance of this, of a colony where they took the wax and dyed it red. And the entire frame that the bees built using that red dyed wax was red, like cherry red. It was really cool. Looking forward to that presentation and the work that he's doing. I think his name's David Wade. Do I have that right? Sorry to say, I don't remember that off the cuff. Whatever the case, if you're trying to build wax, you got to do it now. That's the final part of the season that gets it done. It's hard to do during later stages. I tried the experiment last year. of building three frame colonies and seeing if I could get them to draw wax through to 20 frames, or at least 12 frames. I was doing 6/6s, and even with constant food, it didn't work. There were a lot of bees at some point, like the population came up and so on, and I fed them from June through to the end of October, and they didn't do it. Now, on the contrary, if you have a full nucleus colony today with a plethora of young bees and you give it foundation, they'll be comb-making machines. And if you have a full, robust colony and you're giving them a frame here or a frame there to build and you're feeding them, they can get that job done. But if you made a split and you're trying to get them to build all that foundation all the way through to build a new beehive after the summer solstice, unless you're doing that method that I just talked about, that's a hard run. What I ended up with is 6 drawn frames and a couple of kind of frames. And at the end of the year, in order to get 12 frames, I ended up going and getting drawn comb and swapping it out. Now, the interesting thing was some of those frames, and they were wax foundation, by the way, not plastic. Some of them were slightly drawn. Oh, I have a bee on my left elbow. Hello, sweetheart. She's looking around grooming. Some of those frames were started. They had a little deposit on them. And this spring when I put them in, the colony saw that and immediately got to work at building right on that spot. And it was almost like some sort of catalyst to get them going. So even though last year they didn't build that out, I did get them to build those frames out this year early. But I wouldn't recommend trying to build frames out in the second half of the season unless you're using that other approach. Now, the good news is no squished groundhog, but just right over the spot as I'm almost approaching home. And I missed them. I was pretty sure I missed them when I came through. It's another police car. It's about the 80th police car I saw this morning. They are out in droves today. As the season progresses, I guess I'll move through queen rearing, move through honey harvesting, and then it's feed, set them up for fall. This year is zipping past. But so far, no catastrophes, no calamities. Everything's been pretty good. Got Bob Kloss on the mind. I hope he's enjoying the bees that he has and can get back to beekeeping. It's weird having a season without Bob hanging around doing things, chatting with him all the time about it. Guess I'm going to have to unpack this colony, walk it up, and I'm going to pull the roof, and I'm going to take a peek and see whether those grafts took place. And then we'll have a lottery to give them out. I think I mentioned that. That's what's inside this colony that I'm bringing home. It was the cell starter, and it actually has the grafts from the class in it. And I'm curious to see how many of them took. I'm a little leery about these queens. They were the ones that the students grafted over a long period of time of the frames being open, how high the quality would be, what age the larva was that they actually chose. I mean, we tried to screen those and make sure that they were right, but still, this was a practice group, not necessarily a great, this is how you would graft for the proper way. Yeah. All right. I guess that's it. Just me rambling. Observations of the season. Like our beloved bees, when beekeepers go together, we can accomplish great things. Thanks for listening in. I'll catch you on the next episode, The Beekeeper's Corner.